Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to KingScottRadioTV.com. We're bringing you the best sounds of Nautical Drive. We have a special treat for you this evening. And, well, when I say this evening, we're talking about 24 hours in a day. We never know when our listeners are going to tune in. The station is set up so that you can always tune in and get a fresh, new beginning. So we have this special guest. We're going to talk about the future of money. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, money. And I know that interests everyone because we have to have it. It's the breath that we breathe in, and it gives us an opportunity to express ourselves in many different ways. Our special guest's name is Lamont Cooley. He's an investment specialist, and he's been around in this new crypto market that we're introducing ourselves to more and more every day. It's growing on us, ladies and gentlemen, and we want to stay in front of it. Lamont, give us a introduction to you and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Hello, Kevin. Thank you for having me. My name is Lamont, and I'm an investor, and I've been in the tech sector and the crypto sector for roughly 7 years now. This gives me some insight into the market flows and the happenings going on today.
Well, what's happening today? Well, we have a new president. And with that new president brings in a new philosophy, a new change in how we're going to operate. Can you tell us or give us an idea as to what this means to the crypto market?
Sure. I like to take a practical and logical approach to things. And what I mean by that, I just go by the data. We saw Donald Trump get elected last November, and the markets immediately responded the same day. And since then, we've seen 300 to 400% increases in the wide sector of cryptocurrencies since then. So the market likes Trump, and it seems as though Trump likes the crypto market. He wasn't always, he wasn't always for crypto. He was skeptical about it in the past, but seems as though he's done his research, and a lot of the crypto investors did support him in his campaign. So since then, he seems like he's changed his tune. But now he expresses a big degree of support for the crypto sector because he's all for American innovation.
Well, when you talk about innovation, the face of money is changing, and we're not always up on the fast pace of it. So what I'm trying to give a description to is the innovation. Why is it necessary for money and how we use it to change in the 21st century?
Mostly focused around the speed of money. Right now, we have so much technology, and things move so fast. We don't really notice the changes, but they're happening all around us. And the thing that's happening most often is people are consuming things faster. They want their information faster, which only makes sense that we will want our money faster. And we can send a text message in less than a second anywhere across the planet. And so our money should move the same way. It should not take us 5 to 10 business days to send money. We should be able to send it in a text message. And that's how far we are behind. Our payment system is, that's how far behind it is with current innovation. So it has to catch up. And unfortunately, the old banking institutions, they're not so keen on upgrading all their systems, because it costs time and money, And a lot of these new crypto companies, these fintech companies, a lot of them are ahead of the old institutions. So there's some friction happening. But we need to get over this transition as quickly as possible and with the least amount of damage to our current infrastructure.
Well, Lamont, let me give some autonomy with that, because you know, our listeners are beginners. They're not as well equipped as you are, and we know that this takes effort, but a beginner is just what it is, a beginner. So I want to add a context to that. When I go to pay a bill, and you pay it through your card system, and then they tell you, well, they process the payment. That doesn't mean that the payment has actually taken place. It's an action. And I think that's what you're talking about. It's in action. And when I hear this, well, they have 3 to 5 days to actually contact your bank. Is that what you're describing to us?
Correct. A payment is two to three parts. When you go and you swipe your card, the payment when your card goes through, that's just the first leg of the payment. And then on the back end, you have a settlement that happens in the background. And that settlement side of the payment usually takes 3 to 5 business days. It can take 5 to 7 business days for larger payments. And it can take 10 days or more for very large payments. So, you know, our small payments, regular retail payments, is one thing. But when you start to move up the tiers to large institutions, their payments take an incredibly long time to process.
So, you know, you think about money moving. They take your $200 and they send it and it goes through. But then what about when you take $2 million? And that's what you just said. But could you break that into a few pieces for us so that we can fully comprehend?
Well, sure. The current financial system, the way it works, the banks, the central banks work through a system called correspondent banking. And what it means is each depositor or creditor has to keep a reserve balance of all of the assets that they transact in. So if you're sending money to Japan for $10 million, the bank in Japan has to have the Japanese currency totaling $10 million and the U.S.-based currency totaling $10 million in case the payment doesn't fully go through or there's an issue. There has to be collateral on both sides. So when a payment goes through, it takes a very long time. And during that time, whether it's 7 days or 10 business days, that collateral is locked up within that transaction. So now that money can't move until that payment finishes processing. And if you're talking about two banks that are far apart, one bank might be closed. China, when China's banks are open, U.S. banks are closed. So there must be a point in time where both ledgers can match up their balances. So all of that takes time. And when you have all of these transactions locking up capital, that's where you have a liquidity crisis, where there's plenty of money, but there's not enough free floating money not locked up in these transactions to do process more payments. And that's where we are right now in our global financial system. We have a global liquidity crisis.
So that in it of itself is where that side of it.
If money moved faster, sorry to cut you, but if money moved faster, we would have more liquidity.
Well, when you use this word liquidity, it sounds wonderful. Good sound bite. But are you talking about the dollars reaching in my pocket or the dollars reaching in their pocket? Or is that both ways?
It's both ways. It's both ways. If you go to the bank and you deposit $1,000 and everyone deposits their money, when you go to the bank to take yours out, it's there. But it's only there because everyone else hasn't taken out their money at the same time. If everyone wants to draw on that amount at the same time, the bank's not going to have all the money at the same time. It's like energy, like in a battery. You can run one appliance off of it, but if you run 10 at the same time, you're going to run out of energy quicker. So this is where we are. When we're speaking about liquidity, we're just talking about available capital. You might have $50,000 in your bank account, but you don't need all $50,000 today. You may only need $500 to make your car payment this month. Even though your car costs $50,000, you don't need all $50,000 of the liquidity today. You only need the $500 to make the payment for this month. Hmm. So it's about the leverage when it comes to liquidity. You don't need all your liquidity today, but if there is a point in time where you do, you want to be able to have the availability of it. You want to be able to go to the bank and say, hey, I want to take all of my money. Everyone can't do it at the same time because there's not enough liquidity in the system.
I see. Well, this brings us to the next point of view. And that would be, how do you make money off of a system as a beginner in the narrative that you just explained?
Well, I'm glad you asked that because now we have some guidance, now that we have this new administration that is pro-crypto. And within the guidelines that Trump's administration has lined out, he wants to give a strategic advantage to U.S.-based crypto projects. So that's where you can start. You can start by looking up the top 10 U.S.-based crypto projects and do your research to find out which ones have the most utility. Also, Trump said that he would like to create a digital asset reserve where they would purchase a strategic amount of whatever top cryptocurrencies there are. Obviously, they're going to be U.S.-based, so you already have a support for most of those top coins and based in the U.S. You want to go about it with the mindset of a long-term investor. These technologies are going to be here long-term. It's going to take some time for them to get fully adopted globally, which means the prices may take some time to fully appreciate. So you want to go about it not thinking that it's going to be an overnight, you know, you're rich. But we all have retirement accounts that we contribute to every week when we get our paychecks. So if you think about it that way, and you put a little aside every time you have free money into these investments, you'll do well.
Well, when you say that, money's tight, and the average American is fighting that old saying, paycheck to paycheck, and some of us are even behind that paycheck. So when you're talking about an investment strategy, and you're talking about the long-term value, this is not a job for a lazy man, would you shed on that?
Absolutely not. But what is? what worth increasing your wealth? It's worth a little bit of your time and effort, you know, I would say personally. Also, for those that don't have a lot of free capital, most U.S. employees have some sort of retirement account, 401k, or pension, and with a monetary value in it. You can use that and transfer it into a crypto-based retirement account with no penalties.
Am I playing with rope and fire, the fire being under my feet and the rope being around my neck?
I don't believe so. If you look at today's stock market, you can tell that there is some trouble in the markets. And you can tell that we've had a overextension in a lot of these assets, a lot of these stock companies. A lot of them are overvalued at this point. There's still room for them to move to the upside. But when you compare them to the crypto projects are down low, while stock market is up high. Most people's retirement accounts are invested into the indices, into the stock market. So your retirement accounts are probably going to suffer in the event of a economic collapse. But what isn't going to suffer is the new innovative technologies that are spawned out of that collapse, which are going to be blockchain and crypto projects. So if you allocate 5 to 10% of your retirement portfolio into U.S.-based crypto companies and their tokens, then you at least have a hedge.
So in terms of college planning, and just to make it practical as to why we're doing this, in the long-term view that we're in, is this where the crypto market can advance quicker than the traditional way?
Absolutely. If you look into BlackRock, which is one of the, if not the biggest asset manager on the planet, what they speak about frequently is the tokenization of everything. And what that also includes are the tokenization of the stock market. So if everything becomes tokenized and included into the blockchain, obviously the crypto tokens that all of this is moving through, they're going to benefit with a price increase.
Well, I tell you, let's look at this in a layman's term. When we started our conversation some time ago, the market was in a very disruptive state because we had people who did not want to be a part of that team. And they did everything that they could to possibly corrupt it. That was when, let's say, one particular crypto, XRP, was at 33 cents per coin. Now we're at what? The last reading that I saw was $2.97. Per coin. If you would have been involved in the market when it was 33 cents and now you're at $2.97, what would that feel like? Can you give us a vision as to what kind of capital you're talking about in between there?
Well, since that point in time, which was not that long ago, it's only a few months ago, you would have seen over a 600% increase on your investment.
Well, that sounds good. What does that mean in dollars and cents? And you know, is that $20 and 15 cents? How would you categorize that in dollars and cents?
Well, if you invested $1,000 6 months ago, that $1,000 would be worth $6,000.
Well, that's a pretty good investment.
Absolutely. And the great thing about this kind of investment is it's completely liquid, whereas other investments, it takes time to liquidate them. So when we say cryptocurrency, the main word is currency.
So I want to make it as clear as possible. When we're talking about these crypto coins, because there are quite a few of them, you have to pick your poison. You have to do your research. It's not for the quick, fast buck. It's faster than a lot of systems, because you can hold a stock for years and it only go up a certain percentage. But with the crypto coins and the different variations of them, you can diversify your portfolio. So that's for the beginner to begin to understand. Let's say if you're an older person in their approaching their senior years, would this be a good investment for them?
I believe so, because for this main reason, crypto and blockchain technology is here to stay. It's only going to grow, much like the internet boom did, quite possibly at a faster rate even. So what we're really speaking on is generational wealth. And even if you are an elder, it does not mean you cannot grow generational wealth for your family to leave behind. It's no different than someone who is young and being able to invest now, and they'll be able to grow their wealth. But the kind of wealth that we're talking about, the kind of increase that some of these projects are going to see, you're going to have more wealth than you need in your lifetime. So whether you're a young person or an old person, the opportunity is there. And we're not talking about 20 years off, 30 years off. We're talking about a 5 to 10 year adoption cycle from this point forward. Now that this administration is going to finally bring in crypto regulation, you are going to see the innovation skyrocket. You're going to see America come back in a big way. There's so many different aspects of our economy that blockchain can help. They'll be able to use blockchain in healthcare. They'll be able to use the blockchain in supply chain management. They're going to use the blockchain in government services, like the universal basic income, you know, like taxes. Like, all of these things are going to be streamlined and made more efficient because of the implementation of blockchain. Also, what the administration created was the Department of Government Efficiency, which in short is, their acronym is DOGE. It's a kind of play on the cryptocurrency Dogecoin. But the whole point of it is to reduce the bloat and reduce the amount of waste that our government sees every month by overspending. And you can streamline these things by putting them all in the blockchain, which makes them all visible and transparent. And we'll be finally able to see where our money is going. And we'll be able to say, no, we don't need the money to be here. We need it to be here. We don't need the money to go there. We need it to go here. So these are just parts of what is going to change moving forward because of a blockchain. And you know that Trump speaks about getting our fair share back, and he talks about the U.S. getting back what other countries are stealing. His words are strong, but what he's referring to is just trade settlements and things like that, where we're not getting everything due back to us. There's a lot of foreign companies in China that steal a lot of technology from us and data from us. That's why you see all of the issues that came up with TikTok and the new AI chat that China released, DeepSeek. All of these things have centering around them blockchain and crypto, and because it's all based on data and moving data. So things look good. Things look good for 2025 when it comes to crypto.
Okay, well, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back, and we're going to touch on that a little bit more before we wrap this up. This is King Scott Radio TV. com, and I am Kevin T. Scott, and we're listening to Lamont Cooley, an investment specialist, here on the Station for the Nation. Well, we're back here on King Scott Radio TV. com. I'm Kevin Scott, and we're talking with investment specialist Lamont Cooley. And before I forget, I always like to shout out to his dad. I had an opportunity to do some work with him some time ago, and he always stays in my mind somewhere back there because I like to see my senior citizens prosper. So here's a shout out for you, Mr. Cooley.
Thank you.
So, Lamont, I'm gonna get a little feisty here. We're gonna talk about the adjustments that everyday Americans are gonna feel. Just recently in the news, President put a freeze on certain kinds of spending, and that spending reflects the SNAP program, which helps children have free lunches, other programs that assist the public in rental assistance. I mean, we are in some difficult times, as our leaders have said in the present and in the past, particularly Martin Luther King, when he said there are some difficult times ahead. That being said, we're going to see some things that's not going to feel very pleasant, and we're going to wonder, well, you know, we talking about taking away as opposed to giving to, because there are, quite frankly, people who need help. And it doesn't appear always that this president cares about the littlest of the littlest man. So how would you put that in a context in terms of investing, adjusting, and what it's going to look like when that cake is being made?
Well, good question. So I'll start with this. When the president says statements like that have large effects on a large amount of people, you have to be able to read in between the lines, because we do have foreign adversaries, and it would not be wise for one to completely, fully lay out from A to Z, the entire plan of action when we're transitioning our financial system in such a way. You only have the first parts or the first pieces, and then you have to speculate on the rest of it. But I would say these changes, you shouldn't panic because of these changes, because these changes have to be made. And if you're not able to see the full picture or the full plan, then you probably shouldn't make a judgment on it, because you could be manipulating your own idea of what you think is occurring. Now, we spoke today in large about a lot of the changes. Most of them have to do with the financial system. 90% of it has to do with the financial system. And as we transition, changes have to be made. So when I spoke about the Department of Government Efficiency, that's what we're speaking about. We're speaking about curtailing extra spending. We're speaking about refining and redistributing how we move this money around. It does mean that when he cancels certain projects that support people, no one ever said that it's canceling forever. What we're saying is we're stopping it so we can decide where the bleed is, and then we can reinvent new programs to service those areas. And those new programs will be built on the blockchain, which are transparent and auditable, so we can all see it. And I think that's the better view to have. If they're going to close one program, it means they're going to create a new one to replace it. And those things take time. So I would understand. I would implore people to understand it from a wider perspective. Also, to speak on a leadership role, if you understand leadership, leadership can't focus on one part of the pie or one group of people. Leadership has to speak for the whole. Leadership has to make decisions based on the whole body. It can't just focus on this small group or that small group. It has to be impartial that way. So,
well, we're getting some call-ins from that comment. Let me stop right here for a moment, because I can see, and I'm looking at the call lines starting to light up. Now, Lamont, respectively, when you're hungry, you're hungry. And when you're talking about someone who's accustomed to eating crab cakes and lobster versus Spam and a piece of beef, and that piece of beef has to be split four ways because there are four kids involved, it's hard to fathom that in the way that you're giving it the description. And we want to make sure that we're talking about the least of these.
You can find out what...
You know, and that hurts. I mean, it's painful to see a child hungry. And when you're talking about a SNAP program that made sure that kids got free lunches, which is one of the things that the Biden administration focused on, and everybody was sort of serviced. You made this point of the whole body. But when you're talking about that middle section having hunger pains, there has to be a level of compassion. And we don't want that long-term, short-term, or no-term. We want those kids and those babies to be fed in our government, because we are supposedly the richest country in the world, the most efficient, the most intelligent, and all of that stuff. So when you say that versus what I've just said, I mean, how would you rationalize that?
Well, I wouldn't try to rationalize it. I just deal in zeros and ones, like a computer. So when you make decisions based on data, not based on emotions. And I understand people have emotions, and I understand compassion. I'm one of the most compassionate people around. But we're not speaking in that sense. We're speaking about factors that have real consequences. All you have to do is go and do research on 1929, when we had a real economic collapse. This is what we're faced with. How many people starved during that point in time? How many people committed suicide during that point in time? How many jobs were lost? How many small businesses went under? You have to look at the bigger picture. You have to look at the whole. So what we're speaking about is a redistribution of wealth. What we're speaking about is a redistribution of resources, because clearly they have been mishandled. Now, when we say, when you say that we're the richest in the world, that's not true. We just have world reserve currency rights. We're actually the biggest consumer in the world. And that's disproportionate to the whole. And when I'm speaking about the whole, I'm not speaking about the United States. I'm speaking about the globe. As a whole, we've been off balance. You can't have the entire rest of the world servicing the greed and the gluttony and the consumption of Americans. It can no longer go that way, because what it creates is full economic voids in all the other spaces. It creates slave labor in all the other places, because everyone is chasing the American dollars here. You have to be, if you want to have compassion, you have to have compassion in that sense.
But you're talking about compassion when you're talking about a senator and these upper echelon people. I'm gonna snap in here for a moment, because I had an experience the other day, and this is just to emphasize what this station is about. I was putting out some trash, and before I could get to the second part of my structure, there was a Caucasian lady dressed terribly because of her condition. And Lamont, it was cold that day, very cold. And she was knocking on my window and wanted me, I suppose, to let her in. And I panicked, because I'm accustomed to just doing what I do and moving on. And some of these congressmen and people like Elon Musk, and, you know, they're not worried about their next meal, whereas there are people like this lady. I mean, she's out there in the cold, doesn't seem like the world cares. And you know, when you're talking about children going to lunch, not having any food to eat, and here we have people talking about adjustments and things like that. Who should we be sacrificing? Should it be the least of these? Or should it be those who can actually afford to back up off the table, to not maybe order that filet mignon or that caviar, and maybe the champagne has a little extra water in it? Those are the people that we're talking about. That's what the public, and that's what the society, we're supposed to be helping, the least of these. Not the ones that are calling the shots and making the adjustments, because they're already eating well. Go ahead.
So, I don't think we should be thinking about it in the sense of who we are sacrificing. I don't think anyone should be sacrificed. I think our bad ideas should be sacrificed. I think our methods should be rethought and recalibrated. And I think that everyone should have some grace in that sense, because everyone has value, and the government understands and knows this. And the government just wants to, I'm not speaking about the individuals in the government. I'm speaking about the ideals of a government. Because individuals, most of them are corrupt. But the ideal of a government is to make every citizen productive. And people who are just on a handout become less and less and less.
Who are they? For those who just want a handout, who are we talking about? The immigrants? The ones that are trying
I'm talking about myself. I'm just talking about the human condition. I'm just talking about the idea that you want to work less than work more. I'm just talking about your comfortability and your natural way of life. We're not meant to be here to work all day. That's not the objective here.
Mm-hmm.
But yet people are, because they're trying to find money. Now, that person that was outside the door, outside your window, she might have been asking for money, but that's not what she needs. She needs food. She needs a warm clothes and a bath. That's what she needs. She could have all of that without 1 cent. It's all about the management of resources. We don't need more money. We actually need less money, because they're just printing it. So when you have a nation here that has all of this wealth, and everyone else outside of it that doesn't, what you create is a void, and everyone outside of it is trying desperately to get in. So you have to make the conditions fair so all the wealth can be distributed fairly. So what, like I said before, if we're going to have an economic crash, they're going to implement a universal basic income, which means you, I, and everyone else that is a legal citizen will have a monthly, a weekly stipend from the government. They will have free money inserted into their account with the Fed using blockchain, and they will have a quality of life that America decides is a standard, where there's no one that can fall below, because you will have a monthly stipend or a weekly, whatever they end up doing it, you will have a universal basic income. And that will make everyone whole. The problem there is, if you're an illegal citizen, well, guess what? You don't get a part of that universal basic income. And that's how it's going to work. But between now and then, there's going to be some turbulence. There's going to be some time where people feel like there's uncertainty. There's going to be some time where maybe ends might not meet. These transitions seem like they take forever, but they happen quickly. So you're going to eventually see every nation follow behind what America does, because America is the leader when it comes to finance. So you'll see everyone create their own digital currency, and then they will distribute that digital currency between their citizens. And then those citizens will use that in the global marketplace, however they deem they need to.
Well, in that sense, because...
But you can't just have money flying around this country going to random people, random illegals, when the American citizens, you know, you have army vets that aren't getting any assistance, and you'll have someone that crosses over the border that gets everything. I'm here in New York, and you have 5-star hotels full up with illegals living a better life than most Americans. And they're doing it for free.
You think it's because of that statute that says, bring me your poor, your broken, all of that stuff that is...
I don't think many Americans are going to care. They just care that they're working hard and they're not getting any compensation from their government. And people that have not contributed to this great nation are getting their tax dollars. That doesn't seem very compassionate to me.
I agree with that, because, I mean, you know some things about me. I'm in the ministry business, being a pastor, and that compassion is universal, though I do believe in right and wrong, and none of us are perfect people to advance ourselves. When I saw that lady, there was nothing that I could do to help her. I can't put myself out there when, you know, I don't know whether a person's mind is stable, and, you know, there's things that have to be protected in all of our environments, and you can't just be so gullible or so foolish to let anyone into, you know, your closest circle. And I have seen for myself different nationalities in buildings when the room is full of them, and they are getting food stamps, because that's at that level. Food stamps, transportation certificates, things like that. And last time I checked, you know, when I saw the line of who we were feeding, I was in that line, you was in that line, and a whole lot of other people was in that line, and I'm looking over there across the line, and I'm like, where'd you come from? Because I want to know. I mean, I do have some concerns, but I want the public to know that we are addressing, as we're talking about investing, we are addressing all facets of it, and the wastefulness of money does count. But I don't want anyone to make any mistakes and think that we don't know or we don't care or we are not wise enough to see what we're seeing. Yes, there should be an accountability of our tax dollars with the government and how they use them. What I don't want to do is to hurt the littlest of them. I mean, even if you are a foreign child, I don't want them to go hungry too. My solution is to for their government to get better, and they can't put that burden necessarily on the American backs. And, you know, we didn't ask to be here. We were brought here, being an African-American man myself. So I say all that to say that, you know, you have to look at the whole picture in totality, but I want it recognized that we know that they're there. We know that some people are going to suffer, and we're praying for you.
I think those people will find a new way to be productive. And with this new wave of innovation in America and American-based companies, there will be more opportunities for people. And that's especially what we need. We need American innovation. We need another industrial age. And I think blockchain and AI and crypto is that solution for us to make us productive again, and so we can get the money and the value flowing so that everyone has a piece of the pie.
Yes, absolutely. Well, I you know, this has been a terrific enlightenment. When the phones start jumping off like that, I know that we're really reaching into that 1.8 million listeners that we have tuning in to the station. Sometimes the conversations get a little risky or a little risque, and we always want to have a level of protection, not just around you, but myself, because it's dangerous out here. Make no mistake about it, we are in a war. And this war is lethal. And if you're not careful, you can be taken out. And that's what we are trying to make sure, that everyone is on the same page with this new crypto market, how you can take advantage of it, and what we can do to become a better society within ourselves, taking all those things into consideration. As to what we can do individually and then collectively to make this a better place. So, Lamont, I'm going to give you the last words and give you an opportunity to express what you feel and what you see. And then we're going to call it a day. And, you know, again, these things are important, that our radio stations and TV stations are letting people know what's going on, and you can lean to us and support us with your efforts so that we can continue this type of broadcasting here on King Scott Radio TV. You have the platform.
Well, there's a lot going on out here today, and the media is not our friend. So I say that to say, make all your financial decisions based on data, not your emotions. This system is designed to elicit emotional responses from you. It's all noise. Use the data and see your opportunities before you clearly. This is a point in time where you have the biggest opportunity of your lifetime. Don't let the noise dissuade you from that.
Wow. Profound words from Lamont Cooley. We just want to continue to shout out to him and his family and all the other people who listen to this station. We are here to do God's work. It's always a team effort. And for me personally, my Lord and Savior Jesus Christ has guided me to a belief that if I trust him, I will be okay. This has been another broadcast by KingScottRadioTV.com. I'm Kevin T. Scott, and our co-host, we're going to call him a co-host today, was Lamont Cooley, and we hope to have him back as soon as we can get him back to keep us informed as to what's happening going into our future. KingScottRadioTV.com.